Welcome back to Radio Boston. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty.
And I'm Anthony Brooks. Back in the summer of 2004 in New York City, Brooke Burrell developed a series of painful, itchy welts. She went to the doctor, who ruled out Lyme disease, and prescribed her antibiotics and steroids to ease the swelling and the itching.
But the welts came back again and again, and their origin remained a frustrating and painful mystery. Finally, a phone call to her father, a doctor living in Kansas, offered an answer.
He suggested, maybe you have bed bugs.
Bed bugs? Ah, are you crazy? Burrell said, that's not even a real thing.
But of course it is a real thing. Bed bugs are real. They provoke real fear, real suffering. They even had a leading role in a recent episode of Orange is the New Black.
You got some shampoo or something?
They don't live on you, just in your sheets and clothes and so now we gotta wash everything.
Wait, you gave them to me?
Someone give it to me first.
What's going on?
Black eyes, got scabies.
It's bed bugs. It's different.
Cooties are cooties.
You probably got it from your dirty little sister.
Okay, so bed bugs have probably been around with us for some 250,000 years. So they very likely harassed our ancestors who lived in caves. That's just one of the facts you learn from Brooke Burrell's new book about her experience with bed bugs and about their long biological and cultural histories. Brooke Burrell is a science writer and contributing editor of Popular Science. Her new book is called Infested, How the Bed Bug Infiltrated Our Bedrooms and Took Over the World. She'll be at the Harvard Bookstore tonight, and she's with us now. And Brooke Burrell, welcome.
Thanks for having me.
It's really good to have you. This is, and I don't mean this critically, but it's a creepy book. it leaves me feeling like I can feel these bed bugs crawling around my shirt collar, but I don't think I have bed bugs.
I don't think you have any.
Okay, I appreciate that. That's all I needed to hear. Listeners, we want to hear from you. Have you had to deal with bed bug infestation? What was it like? What precautions do you now take to avoid them? What do you want to know about bed bugs? They're all around us, apparently. You can give us a call at 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. Brooke, I'd like to just start where your book starts and just describe you, because you describe this infestation that you suffered in 2004. What happened and how did you take care of it?
Sure. And technically, it wasn't an infestation because it hadn't actually reached really high numbers. I only ended up finding one bug in all of that searching. There probably were more, but that's all we found. But I started getting these bites. We didn't know what was going on. And it was quite a while ago before they were really in the news a lot. And I had never heard of anyone having them before. That was not the immediate thing that the doctor or the exterminator went towards. They didn't know, they didn't suggest that.
Yeah.
So it really was strange trying to figure out what was going on. And when we did figure it out, I was really dumbstruck because I had always thought, I don't know how much I had actually given bed bugs thought, but a thought before, but it always seemed like a catch-all phrase for just any creepy crawly that
exactly.
could be in your bed. I didn't know it was a species.
I mean, you were serious when your dad suggested it and you said,
yeah, I was mad.
Is that even a thing?
Yeah, that's exactly how I felt. I'm pretty sure I didn't put this in the book. I think I hung up on him. Sorry, Dad. But I was really irritated that was a suggestion because I was like, you've got to be kidding me. That's not a real thing.
Right.
How dare you suggest that?
Yeah. So how did you deal with it? Because one of the things that you write about, this book is so fascinating because you go in so many different directions, and we'll get to a lot of them. I mean, there's history, but there's also an industry today that's arisen to combat bed bugs, right?
Yeah, absolutely.
So you became acquainted with that.
Yes, absolutely. I mean, it's really almost the Wild West of an industry there because it's relative. I mean, some of the things that they're using have been around for a long time or are new adaptations and add-ons onto things that we've been doing for centuries. But there definitely is a lot of industry that sprung up around this problem.
Right. So are these folks that come in and sort of want to spray your rooms with DDT-type chemicals, which I know DDT is no longer legal,
sure,
but
there are other things. Well, in some there aren't actually that many new insecticides on the market or in the pipeline. Most of the stuff in the book, I mean, I talk about that stuff as well, but most of this Wild West situation that's going on are just other products, a lot of which you can buy over the counter or other sort of new treatments that pest controllers are using,
yeah,
aside from insecticides.
Right. Now, what's the most common way that folks end up with bed bugs in their house?
Well, if you're living in a city and living in apartments or any other what they call multi-unit dwelling, so just a lot of units in one building, it probably is more likely that they're coming in from the neighbors. You can also pick them up traveling. Usually if you're staying maybe in a hotel or a hostel or something like that that has them. Sometimes, I don't know how much you get this here in Boston, and New York will have a lot of newspaper reports saying they're on the subway or whatever. It's not very likely that you'll pick them up in public spaces like that. It's mm-hmm. possible, but not very likely to pick them up in, you know, subway or on the T or in movie theaters and that kind of stuff. So don't worry too much about that. But probably the biggest problem is coming in from neighbors if there's already a building that has a problem.
Right. So coming in, meaning that they'll, as you describe in the book, they're pretty good hitchhikers,
yeah.
right?
Mm-hmm.
So what are the different ways that they'll hitch a ride from one place to another?
Well, so... And they're not. It's not that they're looking across the room and seeing your backpack or your purse or something and saying, "Hey, I'm going to go over there."
Right.
It's more if you're set. Like if you are in a home or a hotel room or whatever like that that does have bed bugs, and you set your stuff around where the bed bugs are likely to be, and there are high numbers there, it's more likely that some of them might, you know, wander into your bag and stuff like that. And so that's how you usually pick them up from other people's houses if you're going into those homes. If you're living in an apartment building, the bugs can travel across the hallway or through the walls, depending on the structure of that building. They might be able to go from one unit to another that way. So in those cases, they aren't necessarily even hitchhiking. They're just shifting from one room to another, basically.
I want to ask you about some of the myths. We heard that clip from Orange is the New Black. And even in that clip, you know, people referring to it to bed bugs as scabies
yeah.
and sort of talking about cooties or cooties, and you can catch it from different people. I mean, what are some of the myths that have grown up around bed bugs that you feel are should be debunked?
Sure. I mean, well, that one, they talked in that clip about bed bugs living on you, and that's
yeah.
There have been cases if you have a really, really bad infestation, someone might have them on their clothes or on their person, but that's not as usual. So they're called temporary ectoparasites, which means that they come and they bite you and then they go back to their hiding places. They aren't like lice or something like that that's living on your body, or like scabies for that matter. I think one myth that comes up often is that you only get bed bugs if you are dirty, or also often they're unfairly affiliated with people who are poor. Bed bugs don't discriminate. They can end up with anyone. There are definitely populations like the elderly and the disabled and the poor who are more vulnerable because it can be very expensive and physically taxing to get rid of them. But so that's another one I think that is really unfair and really important. And just the idea, yeah, of being dirty or something like that. Like if you're clean, that you can't get them. That's not necessarily true. Getting rid of clutter and stuff like that certainly can help.
Well,
not have them. But
listeners, we're talking to science writer Brooke Burrell. Her new book is How the Bed Bug Infiltrated Our Bedrooms and Took Over the World. We're at 1-800-423-8255. Tell us your bed bug creepy horror story, or pose your question to Brooke Burrell. She's got a lot of answers, a lot of information in this book. We're going to get to some of the history of bed bugs in a moment. But let's go to Melissa, who's calling from Somerville. Hi, Melissa. You're on the air.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call. So I don't have any horror stories yet. I'm happy to report. But I recently started an Airbnb venture, and I'm just wondering, are there any precautions that I should be taking to prevent an infestation? Like covering my mattress, or you know, or putting a luggage rack in the bedroom. Like, what should I be thinking about as someone who, you know?
Yeah. So the mattress covers you talked about, those won't necessarily prevent you from getting bed bugs. They'll protect the mattress and the box spring from. You won't have to get. They won't be stained from the bed bugs or anything like that. But it doesn't mean that it'll completely stop them from coming into the home. I think definitely doing laundry, washing all of the bedding and anything else on high temperatures. High heat does kill them and their eggs, and drying them on high heat can certainly help. I mean, these are things that you probably would do after having a guest anyway. Regularly vacuuming, maybe investing in a steamer, because again, the high temperatures will kill them, and steaming around the bed. And just keeping really vigilant, and keeping an eye out for the signs of them on mattresses, for example. They'll usually hide in cracks and crevices, and you'll see them kind of clustered together. You'll see the actual bugs and also cast skins that look like the bugs, but they're basically empty because they've cast those skins off as they're growing into larger sizes. You'll see, this is getting kind of gross, but you'll see bed bug poop, which kind of looks like kind of flecks of pepper or mold. You'll see eggs, which look like teeny tiny white pieces of rice. Those usually will all cluster together, and those will all, that's where they hang out. Those are their homes. I mean, if you are going in, though, and really often investigating this place that you're renting out and checking everything and cleaning, it probably won't ever build up to that point, though. But those are some things that you can kind of keep an eye out for. That's about it.
All right, Melissa, thanks for that call. Let's go to Maya, who's calling from Stoneham. Hi, Maya, you're on the air.
Hey there, how's it going?
Very well. What's on your mind?
So I actually recently had a pretty scary bed bug experience. I was traveling in South America for a few months, staying in hostels. And in Buenos Aires, I made the number one backpacker's mistake. I had my backpack on my bed. My clothes were kind of all over the place. And I started getting little bites on me. Didn't know what they were. And finally turned up on another girl in the same room. She really got attacked and figured out that it was bed bugs. And it was funny because I went to the owner of the hostel and, you know, the manager's there and tried to talk to them. And it really wasn't a big deal down there. You know, I was freaking out, crying. And, you know, for them, they just called it was like the sickness of the backpack. It's just kind of something that, you know, culturally we're not used to, but in other places it's just not such a big deal, but definitely a nightmare.
The sickness of the backpack. Well, Maya, thanks for that call. And Brooke, this raises one of the questions I wanted to ask you, and you write about. I mean, I never thought about a really simple precaution in any hotel, and that is don't put your bag on the bed.
Yeah, it's pretty easy. Don't put your bag. I usually go into a room. I don't do this. I still do this, but I am not as careful as probably I could be, because after a while it gets kind of tiresome always checking your room every time. But leave your bags by the front door in your room. Go check the mattress. Check around the seams. Pull those sheets up. Look around the headboard if you can. This isn't a guarantee that if you don't see them there, they're not there. But then on top of that, don't put your stuff on the bed. Do laundry when you go home. These are some things that can certainly help you not bring them home if they're there.
I want to ask you a little bit about bed bug history, because this book is so much more than just, you know, what to do, how to get rid of them, and how to avoid them. You dive really deep into sort of the history of the bed bug in your book. And you write at one point that in a way, we created the modern bed bug. It evolved to live on us and to follow us. What do you mean by that?
Well, with a lot of, I mean, this is also true for a lot of other pests that we have and a lot of other infectious diseases, for even that, you know, the different critters that go after our crops. We're creating these niche environments for them to thrive in. With the bed bug, I mean, it probably originated around 250,000 years ago. It might be a little bit less than that. Scientists are still trying to pinpoint that, but it's been around for a very long time. It's tracked us all over the world. We have these living spaces that we, you know, make very comfortable for ourselves. We have the right temperature and we have the right humidity and everything. We have a very comfortable living space for us to live in. And we've created these little niches that are also really great for the bugs to live in. And we're their food. And we have just made it. There's more of us than ever before. There are more homes than ever before. There are more places for them to live. And we are their main food source.
We're their main food source. And I gather they've also become resistant to some of the chemicals that we've tried to treat them with.
Yeah, right? That's true. So around World War II and the advent of DDT, that's when we first were able to knock their numbers down pretty considerably. That was the first broadly used synthetic insecticide. But within years, there were some pockets building up resistance to that insecticide, because it's just inevitable. It's an inevitable part of evolution for that to happen. So flash forward 50, 60 years later, we can't use DDT anymore. But as these bugs have been resurging, the main insecticide we are able to use, or a class of insecticides called pyrethroids, these work pretty much the same way in the insect's nervous system as DDT. So all of the offspring of those bugs that were resistant to DDT have cross resistance to those other insecticides. There are some other things we can use in the bedroom, but that's a really widely spread one. Insecticides are a cheap and relatively easy method to get rid of these things. So it's not as, those chemicals are not as effective as they used to be.
Is this a case, I'm wondering the degree of real risk that we're facing, because I think in a way the response to bed bugs, it's a little bit like any parent knows this with young children, you end up dealing at a certain point with head lice, around which many of the same kinds of myths are attached. But, you know, it's very hard to raise a kid in this modern world and not have that experience once or twice. If you're lucky, you have it once or twice. But what you learn from the doctors is that, head lice actually don't really do anything other than just creep you out. So are bed bugs actually dangerous beyond just being creepy and uncomfortable?
For the most part, for most people, no. There's some caveats to that. But for one, as far as spreading disease, for example, bed bugs are not known to spread any diseases. That doesn't 100% mean that they don't, but scientists have been trying to infect them basically with different viruses and bacteria and what have you for decades, and they haven't found any that the bugs are able to spread onto humans. There was a study that came out last fall. This is just for mice, so don't panic yet. But there was a study that came out that showed that bed bugs can spread the parasite that causes Chagas disease in mice. So that's an area we're going to have to pay attention to. There's a lot more research that has to go on there. There are some mental health impacts, so that can be really serious for some folks, especially for people that don't have any existing issues, the bed bugs, and this doesn't seem that surprising, but there has actually been research on this to support it, that an infestation can actually cause anxiety and insomnia in people that didn't have any pre-existing evidence of those disorders. And then with people that do have pre-existing mental health issues, the bugs can really push them to the edge. There have been attempted suicides. There have been actual suicides. I got a letter from a reader maybe a month ago now who said that she had read the book and it brought back memories because she had a daughter who had had bed bugs and had attempted suicide. So for most people, it's not a hugely life-threatening thing, but there are some people where it can push them over the edge. So in that frame, it can be quite serious. Mm.
Is the problem getting worse? I mean, we go through periods where suddenly you're reading about it in places like New York City. It's definitely an issue among tenants in cities like Boston. But is there evidence that it's actually getting worse?
So it's a little tricky because there aren't any, there's not like a national bed bug board like census, going door to door and counting the bed bugs or anything like that. There are some numbers these are industry numbers from the National Pest Management Association, I think, in conjunction with the University of Kentucky. And they do a survey of pest control operators, and they've been doing this for a few years now, and they report how many out of all the treatments they've done in the past year, how many have been bed bugs? And that has continued to go up in recent years considerably compared to, 5, 10, 15 years ago and beyond that. As far as actual numbers go, it's a little hard to tell, but it seems as though, based on the data that we have, they're not getting any better.
All right, let's take a couple more calls. We're at 1-800-423-8255. Everything you've always wanted to know about bed bugs and more. Sandy is calling from Belmont. Hi, Sandy, you're on the air.
Hi, I'm calling from Belmont. I was calling to comment on kind of a systemic problem. We were exposed to bed bugs once and got them. We were exposed twice, got them once. And the issue that I have is that, there's all these systems which we need in order to prevent bed bugs and stop them, and they don't all work together. So, for instance, my exterminator told me to send our stuff out to the dry cleaners, but then the dry cleaner could have gotten bed bugs from us. That's one example. And the other example I had is of au pairs. We had an au pair from overseas who came in to our house, and there was no training for these for au pairs in how to deal with the threat of bed bugs, despite the fact that they travel massively while they're in this country. Hmm. So that's my comment/question, and I'll take any response off the air.
Okay, thanks a lot, Sandy. Brooke, what do you hear there in Sandy's comments?
I mean, I think that there isn't a lot of funding for bed bug research or sort of outreach in general, partly because they don't spread disease. They aren't considered as much of a threat as some other things that are more pressing, at least as far as, the funding agencies that focus on these things. As far as, different businesses interacting with one another, that's a really tough thing to do, to have the laundromat, talking to the exterminator and what have you. I think that it's something that people have to sort. It's not easy because it's not easy to deal with bed bugs in general, but everyone needs to help educate one another, take that on themselves as far as maybe not taking it to the dry cleaners or, putting them in the dryer at home if you can, or getting a steamer and all these things, trying to do your best not to spread them beyond where they already are. It's really difficult, though. It's hard to put that on individuals, but I think that that's unfortunately where we are right now, because it's more like a patchwork on how things are working on the local and state and federal level.
Brooke, I want to ask you a sort of broad question about sort of what you learned, because of course this started with you being afflicted by bed bugs, and then you studied them and wrote this book, and you end the book with this quote by this ethologist, Carl van Frisch, and he said, "No animal is so insignificant that it might not reward our attention with great discoveries." And I came away thinking that you have a sort of reverence for this little creature that we've all sort of learned to dread. Talk a little bit about that.
Yeah, well, I think that, I mean, I came out of working on this book with, I find them really interesting, and you do have to give them some respect. They are survivors. They've been around for a long time, and they have some really interesting, you know, behaviors and evolution and all kinds of stuff. So I think that, and also the other reason I was really drawn to that quote, so in general, just learning more about any living thing, I actually think you can, it can be quite illuminating just about life in general, about the beauty of biology and so forth. The other thing that I thought was interesting about the bedbug, and this is in the last chapter, a group of researchers have been looking at these bugs. So I said before that they probably originated in these caves long, long time ago, or I think I said that earlier.
Yeah, no, you did.
Okay, good. So now some of those bugs are still living with bats in some caves, but also in attics of apartment buildings and attics of churches throughout Eastern Europe and maybe other places too. And these are the same species of bedbugs that lives on us, living with these bats. And these scientists have started looking essentially at the DNA of these different groups of bedbugs living with these different hosts and comparing them. And they're finding that the bug is really still splitting off on that evolutionary tree onto us into a new species. And that if all this still continues to work out the way they think it is, that means the bedbug is maybe an interesting model to study evolution and how a critter can split onto two different hosts. So thinking about the bedbug as a model for evolution is pretty incredible, but that is, if you're paying attention to different places, you can see that stuff.
Sure. Well, it's a fascinating subject. That's Brooke Burrell. She's a science writer and journalist. Her book is called Infested: How the Bedbug Infiltrated Our Bedrooms and Took Over the World. She'll be talking tonight about her book at the Harvard Bookstore. You can find more information at radioboston.org. Brooke Burrell, thank you. Really interesting.
Thanks for having me. Yeah.
Listeners, stay with us. There's a lot more ahead. I'm Anthony Brooks with Meghna Chakrabarty. This is Radio Boston.